Oh, I hope you had a nice day off. I had a really nice day off, mostly gardening. Let's see. A couple of things. When I came down from my house last Friday, I forgot to bring the Tibetan scripture that we're studying, which I always open up and put in front of me because it impresses people, but which I never use personally because I have the input from our computer centers in the refugee camps, and it's much easier to use because then I can stick in pieces from other scriptures in the flow of things. But I like to, I don't know, I think there's a blessing to the woodblock prints, and I thought I'd pass it around just for fun. Ula, you want to just start it somewhere in a corner, and you can pass it from person to person and take a look at it. I think this one is particularly well carved, but you can get a feeling for why we have to type, because it's plastic. Every letter is a different shape, and you can't OCR it. I mean, eventually you'll be able to, once you have enough input, to use artificial intelligence, but that will mean you'll have to type for another 50 years before you can teach the computer to read it. So anyway, I thought you'd like to see the scripture. I just like to touch it and to feel it. It's not Tibetan paper. It's cheap Indian paper. Tibetan paper uses a certain bush that grows in Tibet. It's probably a little bit like mesquite, and it has a high fiber content, and it's slightly poisonous. So it tends to burn your eyes a little bit, but the paper lasts for a few hundred years. I have scriptures from 300 years ago, and they're the same as when they were made, and they're cool. Okay. So anyway, I thought you'd like to see it. What I thought to do to start today, Pabon Krupache already mentioned making butter lamps, and in fact, today we're going to get to the section where he explains he makes reference to a sutra where they explain the benefits of offering butter lamps and incense. So I thought when we get to that section, I'll show you how to make a butter lamp, because there's a skill to it. And they're very beautiful, and they're fun to know how to make, because they use ghee, and they last for a long time, like much more than a tea candle. What do you call this? Tea light. I think tea lights are mostly paraffin or petroleum, and I personally don't like to use them much, especially if I'm doing a retreat or a lot of meditation. To have them burning around you is a little slightly carcinogenic, and I also don't like the smell of them. But butter lamps are very, I don't know, the ghee smell is very, I don't know, beautiful and comforting. And if you've spent a lot of time in Tibetan temples, when you smell burning ghee, you feel spiritual, like Christmas tree smell or something. So for someone who's been in Tibetan culture for a while, that smell has many connotations. Smells are the most powerful mnemonics, right? You smell melted butter and you think of the best movies you've ever seen. And when you smell burning ghee, it will come to mean that it's time to meditate or something, and you'll enjoy the smell. And I think it's very... Ayurveda says it's a very good for you. So anyway, it's also why all Tibetan temples are covered with black soot. Okay, and if you make the wicks wrong, it makes soot all over your house. So we have to do a little side training on butter lamp wicks. Okay, so we'll do that tonight, and we set up some cameras and. We'll do an experiment to see if we can, you know, broadcast that and you can see it, okay? I think it's very beautiful. On the most important day of the Tibetan Buddhist year for Gelugpas, which is called Ganden? Namche. Ganden? Namche. Ganden means Ganden, paradise, Tushida. It came to mean the Gelugpa lineage is centered at Ganden. That was Jetsun Kapa's home monastery. He named it Tushita, which is sort of, what do you call it? Chutzpah, right? Ganden, so Ganden means the Galupa lineage. Nga means Nyer Nga, means the 25th day of the month. So I believe it's the 10th month of the Tibetan calendar, which is Mongol, and the 25th day, which is a Sechu. We celebrate Jetsun Kapa's birth and enlightenment and Pari Nirvana, right? So on that day, it's a tradition to offer 100 butter lamps. In our particular lineage, Sera, both Sera J and Sera Me, on the night before, on the 24th, on the night of the 24th, you take 50 or 100 lamps out of the 1,000. It's tradition to make 1,000 butter lamps, which is called Dongchi, the night before, to burn on Jetsun Kapa Eve, okay? But the night before that, which is the 24th of the 10th month, it's a tradition in our immediate lineage, to offer 50 or 100 butter lamps to Jamchen Chuje, who was a disciple of Jetsun Kapa, who founded Sera. So just so you know, that's a tradition, all right? Rinpoche would start making the butter lamp wicks by hand about 2 months before. So he would watch the New York Yankees and make wicks hour after hour until he got up to 1,000. You see what I mean? It would take a couple months. And so I got a lot of practice because he made me sit there and watch the Yankees. And I also learned a lot about baseball. But I did thousands of those also. So it's a nice thing to know how. And it's nice to have one burning in your home. Okay, so here we go. We're talking about a sutra which Pabongka Rinpoche alluded to but did not include in his book. And so it was describing 10 different benefits of the traditional offerings. There are 8, right? Argam, water to drink. Padyam, water to bathe the feet of a master or a disciple. Pushpe, which is flowers. Dhupe, which is incense. Dipe, which is butter lamps. Gande, which is perfume, to place on the lama's body or the body of the Buddha, right? Then rasa, which means what? The taste, meaning food. Julia Child or Mexican tacos. Okay, and then shabda, which is music. Can you hand me the bell in Dorje, Brooks? Is it there? Is there? So there's a custom to make those offerings with mudras or hand gestures, and you can learn them, okay? Traditionally, you hold your bell in your left hand, you hold your dorje in your right hand. You got to hold the bell with your thumb, or you also drop it, okay? And so you go like this, argam, which is offering water to drink, and then padyam. And you spray your fingers, you see. I'm washing your feet. Okay, padyam. And the Tibetans mispronounce the Sanskrit slightly, like they say padyam or something, okay. Argam, padyam. Pushpe, you go down, in, and come up. And that represents how flowers grow from the earth. And then they open. So it's like dramatic, you go like... And that's the opening of a rose or something like that, okay? Pushpe. And then you stick pieces, you stick sticks of incense into the sand. You light the tops and then you stick them into a bowl of sand, right? So you're like dupe, dupa, which still in Hindi they call it dup, right? It means incense. And then dipe, okay? You've got to stick your thumbs up. These are the... width of the light. These are the flames. So you go deep. If you're doing a male tantra, you say aloka, which is the another word for lamp. If you're doing a female tantra, you say dipa. Okay. Then ganda, which means ganda means scent, perfume water, like rose water or something like that, saffron water. And then you say rasa. You do your fingers like this, okay? Rasa, which means a meal, like a Big Mac or something, okay? And then you flip your right hand, okay? You could practice. The right hand comes in towards you. And that represents music. And then when you do that, you play your bell. Okay, we'll do it one more time, ready? Argam, Padyam, Pushpe. By the way, some monasteries go like, and if you come from a Gyume lineage, which you do, what's Gyume? Gyume is one of the two tantric colleges in Tibet. There were only two in the Gelugpa lineage. And only a Geshe was allowed to go to tantric college in the old days. So, and they said your movements should be economic and secret. So you shouldn't go like, you know, like that. So if you're from Gyume, you take great pride in not doing what those other schmucks do. Okay, so it's like, argam. Yeah, and you keep it close, you see. You don't go like, there are some lineages where they're like, you know, we're much more sophisticated. Argam, padyam, pushpe. You do it in front of your heart chakra, by the way. Dupe, dipe, gande, naividya in Sanskrit, which the Tibetans corrupt in nuji, and then shapta. And then it's a tradition to ring the bell in front of your heart chakra, and it's supposed to have an effect on your heart chakra. By the way, you just counterweight it, okay? You don't use your first finger. You use your thumb and maybe two fingers, and you keep the fingers off the body of the bell, which would mute it, right? And then you just let it... You go like this, and you don't go like this. You know what I mean? You just let it like a... What do you call it? Like a pendulum, okay? And then if you want, you can put your finger on the top here. But if you hold it too tight, you see? So the idea is to let it... And just do it like a pendulum. And then at the end, you're supposed to speed up. And then you're supposed to let it go. And take all your fingers off, as much as you can. And it goes for a long time. And then you think of emptiness as the sound of the bell dies out. When you put a bell in a dorje down, you always put the left down first, and then you put the right on the left. You put the dorje on the left. So you can tell if someone has had training or not. Most people will just put it down like that. But a real trained person from Gyume, you see, it's like that. And that's just tradition, okay? All right? Okay, here we go. I'm going to describe from the sutra. So where did I get the sutra? Our ladies, our Tibetan refugee ladies, they've just finished all the sutras. It took them about 20 years. And they just finished this year, okay? They did 1,500 ancient sutras. And they just finished typing them. They're not properly divided yet. The data is all in one big lump, and that's something we're working on, raising funds to do that. But so I found the sutra, because it's all on the computer now. So here's what it says. Yang Deshen Chepe Chöten, which really irritates me with all the publicity we've been getting. Like, we're doing 25 years. We are probably the major supporter of Tibetan refugees for 25 years, and there's no mention of it anywhere, you know, and it really irritates me. Anyway, Yang Deshen Chepe Chöten La Pupuwe Yunten Penyen Chute. So there are 10 benefits listed in the sutra, karmic results that happen to you if you offer incense. Okay, incense can be chima, which means powdered incense that you make a little pile and you light it with a piece of charcoal, like the Catholic Church does. Or you could do sticks of incense, which is called put or simput. And then you can do sung, which is natural leaves like juniper leaves or pine resin, like that. So there are different names for incense. So the benefits of offering chukangshena, jikten na puttabur gyurpadang. So if you make it a custom to offer incense on your altar, then you will become, as you move through Phoenix or wherever you live, you will be sweet to the people around you. You will strike other people like incense. See what I mean? You walk, you go to a store, you go to a restaurant, and you just interact with people there, then they'll say, oh, I like this person. You know, it happens to us on airplanes sometimes. Like, we're just having a really good time, a sweet, honest, good time. And then oftentimes a stewardess will say, where are you guys from? Or what do you guys do? You know, and they're just curious because you sort of spread some little happiness on the plane when we're not bickering at each other because we're jet lagged. But that's how you will be in the world. You will pass the world like a piece of incense. Okay, a good Buddhist is passing to the world like a piece of incense. And even just a 5-minute interaction with a cashier in the grocery store is sweet. And it makes the person feel happy. Number two. Nai wambo number tapa girwa. Your olfactory powers will always be strong. You'll be able to smell things well. Okay, especially good smells. Number three, Luki Chimi Shimba Namba Dapa Girwa. Did I do these before? No. I did flowers, right? You will never need deodorant, okay? No smell from your body. Like, you can do 2 hours of yoga and you don't smell bad, okay? You don't even sweat much. And when you sweat, it doesn't smell bad. It smells sweet, okay? Taktu lud chishimbagyuwa. And it's the opposite of the last one. Rather than a bad smell coming out, a sweet smell will come out of your body when you sweat. Number five, sukhsamagyuwa. You will look more pleasing. Your physical appearance will be more pleasing. Number six, jigdenki gundu dor gyurwa dung. You gain some capacity for protecting other people. Okay, that's probably a reference to incense has some kinds of powers of protection. Okay, certain unseen spirits like the smell of incense, and they will help you and protect you. Okay, so when you offer it, they can smell it. A really well-trained Buddhist who's meditating a lot is aware, or becomes more aware, that even in this room there are thousands of beings which you can't see. There are thousands of spirits in this room that you can't even see. Okay, like in Ireland, all those leprechauns and fairies and sprites, and you know, in Buddhism we say they exist, and they are spirit beings, and they're everywhere. They are attached to buildings or places, and especially a spiritual building. And so when you offer incense, you are protecting them in a sense. And then you gain the karma to become a person who protects the people around them. Okay? Dukpe chunam topa girwa. Number what?
Seven.
You will always have beautiful things around you. Okay? We talked about it. Beautiful, tasteful, elegant things will come to you. Free. Okay? Like beautiful flowers or small, beautiful objects will show up in your life. You know? Like that. Like, you'll be walking on the beach we were walking on the beach in Bahamas, and I was teaching a program there, and we went swimming, and some of us dove down underwater, and there were these beautiful conch shells, big ones like this, white ones. And in Buddhism, these are very important, very auspicious. You drill a hole and you blow them as a horn. And they are a symbol in Tsongkhapa's teachings of spreading the Dharma. So, you know, you're just at a beach. Nobody has any conch shells. You go swimming and you step on one and you bring it up. And it's the most beautiful, precious little thing. And it's like that. Weird, precious little things will come to you. Okay. Look, the text here, by the way, anybody who ever reads it is corrupt. It should say Longchö. It says Lokchö in the text. Longchö Chewa Gyuwa means your financial situation will improve. Okay. Number 9. Tori Sukyewa Gyuwa. After you die, your mind will pass to a better world. Number 10, Tar Yongsen Yangene Dawate. It will contribute in a broad way to your enlightenment, okay, to offer incense. Chipo Didani Deshenshepe Chuden La Pupue Penyino, She So Pue Penyinan. So these are the benefits of offering incense to on an altar, okay, on an altar. By the way, two of the offerings, the butter lamp and the incense are flammable. And you don't know how many temples have burned down around the world, including a nice Western monastery or nunnery in France. Vajagiri nunnery, right? Burned down. Someone was sloppy with a butter lamp. His Holiness was almost killed in Bodh Gaya, I think, when the tent caught on fire and there were like 3,000 or 4,000 people under the tent. And the whole tent caught on fire. And when you offer more than a few butter lamps together, you should spread them out. Like if you try to offer 1,000 butter lamps, spread them out, because they tend to join together and create one big flame. So be careful with these things, okay? At Diamond Mountain, we don't allow open flames or open incense. People have to keep them in. We made a rule, I think it's a 14-inch plate or something, you see? It has to be, you have to be careful about it. And like this candle is dangerous, which when it's burned down, okay? It's just a thing you should be aware of, okay? All right, now we have the 10 benefits of offering butter lamps, okay? Butter lamps. Let's make a butter lamp wick together. Okay, you ready? Scott, are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. Do you have all the stuff, Jigme? Where's the stuff? There is a bag of stuff. You ready? Okay. Thanks. What is that? What's that little bag of stuff, Jiggy? Oh, saffron, I bet. Okay, good. Okay. Oh, okay. All right, you ready to learn? Can you see? All right. Is that a good place for me to do it, right there? Okay, good. So this is a butter lamp cup. It's called a ting. Say ting. It has a hole in the bottom, okay? So you gotta get a, you can buy them online. If you want to know, the ones that from Nepal are better made normally. And silver is better. It just does better with the cleaning and stuff like that. You can buy steel ones, but they get dirty and it's hard to clean them, okay? So silver is nice. I like to keep one like this, okay? I just enjoy having one nice butter lamp going in my house. There was a tradition. Lord Atisha, whose name in Sanskrit is... Atisha is Sanskrit. But his monk's name was Marmen Ze. Say Marmen.
Marmen.
Zay. So he brought this lineage to Tibet. This Lamrim lineage was brought to Tibet by Lord Atisha. Okay. His monk's name is Marme and Zay, which means what, Nimbo? Marme and Zay. Butter lamp maker. The guy who likes to make butter lamps, okay? His name was Dipankara. Dipankara. Kara means to make, like karma, right? The word create comes from that. And the word cereal comes from that, because it's a creation of the earth. And crescent comes from that, because it's expanding. So anyway, kur means to make. Dipa means a light, a butter lamp. So his name was Dipankara. Who was his main disciple? Dromtenje, who's the most famous lay person in Tibet. He never became a monk, okay? And he served his Lama for his whole life. And he felt that he could do more good as a lay person. You know, he could reach more people. And one of my great hopes in my life, and one of the things I've done for the last 30 years, is to try to train lay people as teachers. I think we're in a time in history when it's more beneficial if normal lay people who don't shave their head and don't look weird, they don't have their head burned with incense sticks, and you know, they just look like normal people, normal couples oftentimes with children. And I believe it's the time in history when Buddhism should spread through normal people, normal family, normal lay people. So I think Dromtenje is a good example for us. And he served Atisha his whole life. And especially logistically, he was like a magician. If Atisha needed butter for his butter lamp, suddenly some nomad showed up with 5 pounds of butter. And Dromtenje is later centuries, he's considered a tantric deity in disguise, which I think is kind of cool. I think John Stilwell is Dromtenje, but I'm not saying for sure. So anyway, Dromtenje decided at some point in his life that every night he would put a butter lamp next to Lord Atisha's pillow to his teacher. So he was never separated from his teacher. And every day of his life, he made a butter lamp and set it near Lord Atisha's pillow. It's a very beautiful story, you know. Normally, when you're close to a lama all the time, you get a little bit, you start to see them as normal, but he did the opposite. Okay, so anyway, this is a kind of flower called a star flower. Buddhas like star flowers. These are a little too thin. They shouldn't be floppy, okay? They should be a little more, what do you call them? Straight, yeah, because this one might be too thin, okay? So I encourage you to find something which is a little thicker. You can use a very thin toothpick, but it burns a little too hot. You can use a toothpick if you want to try it, but I think better to find something between this and a toothpick is best, okay? And that's important. So the first thing you do is break the stick high enough to reach over the level of the lamp after you stick the stick into the hole, okay? So there's a hole here for the wick, and you should measure with your eye. It can be too high, but it shouldn't be too low. If it's below the rim of the cup, it won't burn, right? Because it'll be covered with the butter. So it's important. You can make it almost as high as you want, but don't make it lower. So I'm measuring, and I'm going to cut it off about here, okay? So you break the wick, and you can keep this for another one, okay? Then you get the cotton, okay? You can buy cotton balls at Walgreens. They're fine, okay? But I warn you, read the package. There's two kinds of cotton balls on the market. This says all natural, 100% cotton. There are also synthetic ones, and they don't burn. And you'll stand there all day trying to get it to burn, and you'll think the demons are stopping you or something. And don't feel bad. Just read it. It's synthetic, probably. Half the cotton balls on the market are synthetic, so be careful that it's real cotton, okay? Then you Can you see what my hands on the thing? So then, I don't know, maybe you're not supposed to lick your fingers, but it works good. And you coax the cotton out to a little bit of a, can you see? You coax it out flat, like you pull some of the cotton out flat. Can you see it? So see, it's become like a sheet of cotton. Okay? Got it? And then you get your little stick, okay? And you, now you wet your fingers. And then you stick the stick under the cotton, and you start rolling the cotton over the stick, okay? Got it? Here's the tricky part. Then you flip the stick over, okay? Like that. Like you've been, the stick was on the right and the cotton was on the left, and I started the cotton, and then you switch it over to the left. Now the stick is pointing to the left, and the cotton's under my right thumb. And you sit there for a while, and you make that part fatter. So it's like a spindle, and you're spinning cotton onto the stick, okay? And that should be fatter. Why? There should be more cotton there. That's going to stick in the hole, and it keeps it straight up. If you don't put extra cotton on the bottom, it will fall over and burn down your house, okay? So, by the way, the cup should be on a plate that's not less than 10 or 12 inches wide, in case it spills, okay? Then you just start rolling. Can you see what I'm doing? Is it okay? Is it clear? You coax the cotton out, and you start rolling it towards you. Okay? You pull out little sheets of cotton, and you roll it towards you. You spin the flower stem towards you, and you work your way down the stem. Okay? Can you imagine making 1,000 of these for Tsongkhapa Day? You can get to where you can watch New York Yankees and do this with your hands. It's like knitting or something. And you just keep coaxing cotton out. Can you see okay? I'm spinning it towards it. See what it looks like so far? It's not too fat and not too thin. And then you come to the end. When you get to the end, coax a lot of cotton out, okay? A lot of extra cotton. And then pull it off of the ball, okay? And then close up the top so that you have, then you twist and you have, see, you have your little extra piece hanging up? Can you see it? That's where you're going to light it. So if you don't add that extra piece, it won't light well. So that's what do they call it? Dongzhar, I think. Dongzhe is the, what do you call it? Wick. A cotton wick. Got it? See how the bottom is fatter and the top has a little extra on it without stick in it, all right? Then what do you do? Yeah, do not pour the butter in first. Aha! Okay, I'm just telling you what you're going to do because you'll be going like this. Can you see? You stick the fat part down into the hole. And it has to be seated firmly or it will fall over when you pour in the butter, okay? Got it? See how it's a nice wick, right? Then I'm not going to do the ghee. You pour the ghee in there, okay? Don't pour it on the wick. Pour it away from the wick. And I wouldn't fill it up all the way because you'll spill it when you carry it around, okay? The ghee is a little hot when you pour it. You have to melt it. And then it will get hard, okay? The last few drips of ghee spill some on the wick on this part, and it will fold over, and then you straighten it back up again and lick the ghee, okay? And then it'll be, the cotton will have ghee in it, so it's easier to light, okay? So make sure at the end of when you put the ghee in, you pour a little ghee on the wick, And it will flop over, and then you straighten it up again. But then it's got ghee all over it, and it's a lot easier to light, okay? All right, now I want to show you how to make one the wrong way. So you take your stick, you pull off the flower. It helps to lick your fingers a little bit. You coax some cotton out. You make the bottom very fat, right? The stick is facing to my right, okay? I'm starting on the left side with the cotton, right? Got it? And then you do this part correctly. You make the bottom fatter so it'll stay up, right? Then you flip it over. Now the stick is facing to the left. The top of the stick is facing to the left, okay? Then you start feeding cotton onto the thing. But you make it too thick, okay? You put too much cotton on it. And some parts you make too thin, okay? I'm showing you the wrong way, okay? Don't quote me out of context. Then you finish, right? And you see how uneven it is? You see there's fat parts and there's thin parts? So when the fire reaches the thin part, it will die. The aloka, the butter lamp will die. And when it reaches the fat part, it will burn too much. And this will get all black. And it will make your house black. All right? Not in one day, but, you know, of course you're going to be offering these for the rest of your life. So this will get all black and dirty, and then it's hard to clean. Those little pieces of soot that are left after the thing has burned down are terrible. They're like, if you get them on carpet, you can't get it out ever, never. Rinpoche used to say, never, ever. He invented this English thing, never ever. Like, take those little pieces of soot and throw them carefully in the garbage, okay? Because if one of them lands on your bed or something, or your clothing, it'll be black forever. You can't get it out, okay? All right? Now I have warned you about everything. But it's really a sweet custom to offer one every night. I used to do it for my lama every night. At some point, I got lazy and stopped, okay? Maybe I'll start again. I think it's a beautiful custom. As with every spiritual practice of this sort, don't cram them into your day. You know, don't promise to do something that you don't have time to do. Make a commitment, say, for 1 week or for 1 month, I will offer a lamp every night for my mother, who taught me as a lama, you see, for my father or for my teacher or for my children or whoever you want, maybe someone who died. You can offer one every night for them. But don't make a promise that's going to make you nervous. Like, if you commit to a 20-minute practice every night, you should cut 20 minutes of something else. What do you call it? Purposely. You should say, okay, for 1 month I'm going to offer this every night. It'll take me 20 minutes to prepare it. So I'm going to cut. What's a 20-minute thing you can cut every night? Pooping or... No. What's something you can cut? Facebook. You can say, I will cut Facebook for a week. I won't do Facebook for a week. Or make some other 20-minute thing, you know. I'll let my mother wash the dishes or something. Okay? Something reasonable. But my suggestion with all of these practices, don't try to do too many. Don't make commitments you can't keep. Do a trial period. I will offer a butter lamp every night for a week. And then I'll see if I have time to keep it up. Okay? The ghee cooking takes time. Okay? You buy a pound of butter. It should be, I forget. I think the sweet unsalted is better than salted. Okay, so be careful not to buy the salt. Try to get the unsalted kind. You put it in a pan, and you you boil the butter at a very low temperature. So you get it to boiling, and then you take it at a low temperature, all right? Then you watch it carefully. You stand there and you watch it, and you keep stirring it, okay, to make ghee. And I don't know, it takes maybe 10, 15 minutes. And the whey, what do you call it? It's the curdled part, the milk cream, will solidify and on the bottom of the pan. And then the ghee will rise to the top. So the top 3/4 or more of the pan will be clear, golden, okay? If you undercook it before the ghee separates out, it won't burn. And you'll go crazy. You'll think Buddha doesn't like my offerings or something. You'll get all superstitious worries, you know. So cook the ghee long enough. If you burn the ghee, it won't burn either. Okay? If you smell a burnt smell, if you overcook the ghee, it will burn. That you'll see black stuff on the bottom. Just throw it out. You can't use it. Okay? It won't burn. Okay? So ghee cooking is a skill you have to learn. Okay? And that's my, what do you call it? Transmission of butter lamps. And it's a sweet, sweet custom. But only do it if you have time, okay? Don't, like, jam your... Don't commit to too many spiritual practices or you'll get all nervous, okay? Venerable Ellie, can you give me one... Can you guys pour the water out of one water bowl and bring me a... Bring me one? One of the water bowls? Pour the water out. Why don't we do all the... Let's do all the bowls, okay? Let's do all the bowls. Can you bring all the bowls, like pour the water out? Okay. Can you see it if I do it here? Is that good, Scott? If we put things here, can people see it? Okay. Okay. Yeah. Do you have sticks of incense and flowers? And a cookie, maybe a cookie, right? I have a flower. It's probably easier. Can you bring them? Wait, we're going to use other water bowls. Can you put these back on the altar? Sorry, these are difficult. Can you open? Yeah. Two. I just need two. Thank you. Okay. Leave it. Thank you. So there's 8 traditional bowls, right? There's 8 bowls. Argam, Parim, Pube, Dube, Alaka, Gendin, Nudi, Shapta. Okay? And these are very traditional. So these are Darsis, I guess. And these are traditional. They're silver, which is nice, okay? They're easier to clean. They don't get dirty. They're not so expensive, so don't stress, okay? And they're nice. So these are very traditional bowls. And... could I ask a pitcher of water? Yeah. You can get some more water. It's okay. Oh, we have water. Here. We have Voss. So, here's if you're just going to offer 8 bowls of water. Thank you. Om Argam Kuki Ahun. Here's how you do a traditional water bowl offering. So you pour the water into the top bowl until there's about a 2 millimeters, but a little bit less, 3/16 from the top, inches in inches. Okay? the length of a rice grain from the top. Okay, then you take the uppermost bowl, and you pour most of the water into the next bowl, and you set down the first bowl on your left. You are the Buddhist. I'm the guy offering the water. Okay, and then you take the second bowl, and you pour the water into that bowl, and then it's got about a quarter inch at the bottom, okay? And you don't have to be fancy. First you lay them down out of whack, and then you straighten them out later. So don't stress, okay? First they're all messed up. You just get them on the altar. It's bad luck to put down an empty bowl. You see what I mean? The point of doing this is that you're never putting down an empty bowl, okay? Because it's considered bad form to offer something to a teacher or a lama or to an enlightened being, which is empty. And there are stories in the scriptures. Who was it? Milarepa offered his teacher a bowl that was empty, and he got all these problems later. His teacher made him build lots of buildings, and then he tore them down. Anyway, except for one, which is called Gutok, which is still there, 9-story rock building. So you keep pouring. Them in. You can think of lineage, right? You can think of one teacher pouring their knowledge into the next, okay? As you pour. Then you're down to the last bowl. How many bowls we got here? 7. Oh, well. Right? Yeah, sometimes you can have 7 bowls, okay? We'll talk about it later. Sometimes you can just put music like this, okay? And it doesn't have to be in a bowl, right? Then you take your water, you know, and you start with the left-hand bowl, your left, okay? And you fill them up. You're supposed to start slow, right? Increase and then... Oops, I'm spilling it. That's bad luck, right? Anyway, you got it. I'm going to stop. These are not so good for pouring, apparently. You do it, and then you straighten them out, okay? Then you get them all straight. I think these are not so straight. And it's a practice in awareness, right? This is all before you meditate, right? It's a practice in getting your mind calm and thoughtful and doing things sweetly, okay? Can I have the pitcher? Do you have the empty pitcher? So there's also a custom of not putting out 8 bowls of water. And some of them you can replace with rice, with uncooked rice, okay? So I'm going to show you the third one. I'd put a little water, maybe half water into the third one, which is what? Flour. And then the fourth one you can leave empty of water. The fifth one. The fifth one is perfumed water, so you can fill that full of water. Sixth one is food. Argam, Padim, Pube, Dube, Alake. Number 5 is not water. Number 6 is water, I guess. Gandhi. Okay, so number 1, number 2, and number 6 you can fill with water. Okay? Got it? That's Ken Rinpoche talk, by the way. Then you gotta go like this. So then you get some incense. I'm sorry, saffron, okay? Saffron is really expensive. It's a nice offering. You can buy Spanish saffron or you can buy Indian saffron. I think a box of Spanish saffron can be $50 or $60 or something. You can buy little packages of saffron in the spice rack at the store. So then it's a custom to put a little pinch of incense. All it takes is a tiny, tiny pinch. and you put it in a 6 water bowl, which is what? It's supposed to be perfume. So you can put a little bit of Chanel No. 5, which I have a bottle of. Sometimes I do that. Or you can put a bottle of, you can put a drop of rose water or, you know, an essential oil, whatever you like. Tradition is saffron, which is called gurgum. Say gurgum. It's probably a Kashmiri word. And it's a tradition to soak it the night before. So if you're serious about your water bowls, you soak the saffron in a bit of water, and it will turn orange overnight. It will turn a really beautiful color, like honey. Okay, so that's tradition. So we have the first two bowls are full of water, argam and padang. Water for drinking and water for washing the feet of the teacher or the disciples, right? We talked about that. The third bowl is, I've filled the third bowl with some, halfway with water. Can somebody get me a lily and cut the top off? Just cut the top off a lily. Yeah. So you can, this is a little bit big, but you can put a flower in the third one, okay? Like that, put some water. Okay. Argam, pating, pube, flower, pushpe, then dhup, incense, okay? So incense, the tradition is you put the bowl in a bag of rice, and then it should be slightly, not quite flat. You know, those of you who are serious bakers, when you measure a half a cup of flour, what do? You run a knife across the top. If it's a very delicate recipe, like a French pastry recipe, you can ruin it if you don't run a knife across the top. In rice, for your offerings, it should be slightly stacked, okay? They call it pungba. And the rice should be a little bit convex, right? Like it comes out in a bit of, so you go like that and you make it nice, okay? Then you place it down in position No. 4. Then you take two incense sticks. And it's tradition that there's two of them. And then you can't have coffee before you do this, okay? Then you gotta stick them down into the rice. And slightly separated, okay? I used to think they looked like the World Trade Center, so, you know, the two towers, so like that, okay? Argam, padang, pushpe, dhupe. Then what's the next one? Aloke. It's the light. So you would have a small butter lamp, one of those little tiny ones, and you place it in the fifth cup. Okay? You place the whole butter lamp into the fifth cup. Okay? And that's you don't use rice, okay? Because it would be up too high and it might fall over and burn down your house. Okay? Dipe. What's next? Next is the perfume water. Do you see how it's already changing color? It's two or three tiny strands of saffron. And it also takes on a very wonderful smell. It's supposed to be good for you, the smell of the saffron water, okay? What's the next one? Food, okay? Naividya in Sanskrit, or Tibetans corrupt it to new day, okay? So, by the way, you're not supposed to throw the water on the floor. Like if you have drips of water, you're supposed to throw it into a paper towel or go out and throw. It's bad luck to step on that water. It's considered very bad, especially in Tantra, to step on that water, throw it on the floor like this, and to step on those drops is considered very profane. Okay? So then you fill this one up. This is the food one, okay? You can fill it up. And that one you can smooth off the top. Watch, you see? See what I mean? So I cut off all the rice. It's flat. It's not like the rice for the food. Okay? Sorry, incense. Then you set this down. And then you can put a cookie on top of it. Okay? So that's supposed to represent a nice French dinner that you make for your lama. Okay? By the way, if you're living close to your lama, or you have the opportunity to serve your lama frequently, the Larmrim says, forget all this stuff. You know? You are cooking for your lama. You are buying airplane tickets all day on kayak for your lama. You know, you are driving them to the airport. You are, you know, buying their medicine for them. You are cleaning up the toilet for them. You are, you know, you don't need all this stuff. If you're with your lama, which is preferable, whoever your lama is, okay, then direct service is better. These are almost just so when you're not around your lama, you can offer these things, okay? It's better if you're around your lama. And I'm not saying me, because I already have enough problems. But I'm just saying, in your life, if you can find your heart teacher, if you find a person who strikes you as the one, then try to live near them or with them. I moved in with my lama, you know. I gave him my bank book. He threw it back at me and he hit me with it. And then I cooked him some momos. And later he told me he went out in the forest and threw them out, and even though animals wouldn't eat them. He told me that like 10 years later. And then I said, Rinpoche, I'll serve you. I just want to serve you the rest of my life. I'll do anything, you know. Let me live with you. And he said, no. And then I said, can you help me find a place to stay near you? He said, no. He said, if you find one, that's okay. But that's your problem. I'm busy. You know. And I think for like 3 or 4 years, I had to sleep in a garage on a cement floor with a crazy Mongolian, a drunk Mongolian, who one day walked out on Highway 9 and killed himself. I think he committed suicide. But anyway, that was my... you know, then he said, okay, you can stay in the house, which I built. You know, he said, okay, you can stay in the house now. You know, so like that. It's good luck if you can stay near them or, you know, whoever your teacher is. I don't know who your teacher is, doesn't matter. But if you find them, then try to stay with them. Then you don't need all this stuff. This is all just for when you're not with them. Okay, got it? There's a custom to offer even 2 or even 3 or 4 rows, okay, if you still have time before you go to work. Ha ha. If you have extra time in the morning and you're not stressed, there's a tradition to offer a second row. Okay? That's called a dunke and a dakye. Okay? Say dunke. Dakye. Dunke. Dakye. This is a very interesting custom. You can offer one row backwards. You can start from the right. Okay? That's because you're offering it to yourself. Okay? As the Buddha. And this is a tantric custom. Okay? But it's not so big secret, so I'm telling you. Okay? You can put another row out on this side, which faces you. Okay? And then you have to think, I'm already enlightened, okay? I'm already helping the whole world, you know? And when I go to the prison to teach, I'm Lord Buddha's representative, like that. I have status, you know? I'm teaching at Sawara Prison today, right? I heard there was some excitement yesterday. Probably there was a lockdown in the middle of the class. I don't know. Anyway... you can say, today I'm Lord Buddha's representative. I deserve a row for myself. Okay? And it's considered a healthy practice, you know. I'm offering a row to the divine in myself. Okay? I'm not a great person. I'm not perfect. But I do have a Buddha seed in me. And if I work hard, I will become a Buddha. So heck, let's do a pre-offering. Like a pre-halftime show. You know what I mean? Like... let's do an offering to the Buddha I will be. And it's supposed to be a healthy kind of practice, you know. I'm not perfect. I'm a normal schmuck. And I make mistakes. But hey, at least I'm trying. You know, I deserve a row also. So if you're in the mood and you have time, you can start a row from the right. And then that means the Buddhas are offering it to you. They're like, oh, here's my new daughter, or here's my new son, and I'm proud of them. You know, they're trying to practice. They're not perfect, but they're trying. And you can imagine that the Buddhas are offering you a row. Okay? That's a nice practice. That's a tantric practice. Okay? All right. We finished. I'd like to leave them here while we do the rest of the class. Is that okay? I'll offer it to you guys. We're going to take a break. It's getting a little late. We can go for another half hour after we come back. So it's 8:45 now. Can we start again at 9 and go to 9:30? Okay. And we'll actually get we'll get to Tuesday's class. To the first half hour. Okay. Have a nice break. Any announcements? I don't have any announcements, right? Becky? No? Oh, there's a bake sale. The people are... I feel good loving coming on. Oh, I heard a song yesterday. What was that? I thought it'd be nice to play together. I'll try to remember. Let's put it for the food, eh? Okay, we'll start. Somebody asked me a question about disposing of the offerings. I think he'll cover it, but just to say, the rice you can keep around for a long time. It doesn't get old. It's uncooked, okay? The saffron water you change every day, the other waters you change every day, the flour you can change. If you have a dried flour, you can fill that one with rice. Other things like the cookie or the water itself or the flour, it's a tradition not to throw those articles away, and it's a tantric vow also. You're not allowed to throw those articles away where someone might tread on them, where someone might step on them, because they're considered sacred and it would be wrong to have. So you wouldn't throw the water down the sink or in the toilet. It's a tradition to take it out. You could pour it into a pitcher and take it outside and throw it on. It's considered auspicious to put it into lakes or to oceans or to rivers or throw it in the forest. Or you could put it on your garden plants. And that's considered sort of like holy, and it will spread to other people, okay? But not in the sink or the toilet, okay? The other offerings, don't throw in the garbage. They're considered still very karmically powerful, and you don't throw them in the garbage. You take the flower outside, put it somewhere. Like to put it at the base of a tree is considered good luck, or on a stone, or in a meadow, or like that. Somebody asked me about compost. That's fine, okay? Because then that's going to be material for more plants and flowers, and that's fine, okay? Okay, here we go. Maname Pulwe Penyon. Okay, so I'm going really slow, and I'm sorry, but I'm not sorry, because I like to go slow. Slow and careful, okay? So you're not even going to hit homework 3 much. Sorry. I know you're upset about that. Okay. Deshin Shepe Chuten La Maname Pulwe Penyon Chute. There are 10 benefits to offering a butter lamp on an altar, okay? Chu Kang Shena, what are the 10? Number 1, Jiten na Mame Taba Gyodam. You become a light for the world, okay? You become a light for the world. So I think Jesus talked about that, right? Don't hide your... You don't put a lamp in a basket and cover it, right? You should... If your practice is good, if your meditation is good, and it makes you more calm, and it makes you more kind, then as you walk through the day, even among strangers and people you don't know, they will take your presence in their day will bring them comfort and happiness. If you're a good practitioner, then you're just rubbing off on everybody you meet. Like you go into a store, you have an interaction with somebody in the store and you leave, and somehow their day is brighter. And that's what he means. You will be like a butter lamp yourself in the world. Okay? Number two. Hlai mik number thakpa thopa. Say hlai mik. H-L-A. Hlai mik. Hla means what? Angel or deity or something. Hla sa means what? Los Angeles. Okay? It's the same. The land of the angels. Okay? Hlasa means the same as Los Angeles. Right? Okay? So Hlai mik, what's mik mean? Mik. The eyes. So Hlai mik means the honorific form is Hlai chen. You might hear it as Hlai chen. Hlai chen means the eye of a god. And it refers to the capacity to see things going on at a great distance. Okay? So if you offer a lamp whose traditional function is to allow people to see things, right? The karma of that, if you have a good motivation, a compassionate motivation, you could, for example, see a car accident a few miles from your house and take off and go help those people quickly. You see what I mean? You gain the clairvoyance of the eye faculty, and you're able to see things going on at a great distance. We had a Hlai Chen incident recently with a handful of dust. Geshe Ben Gungyal threw dirt on his altar, and Padampa Sangye was off in Dingri, another state, and he said, "Oh, somebody just made a great mandala of me." They threw dirt on their altar. Got it? Okay. He had Hlai Chen, Hlai Mi. Okay, Hlai Mi number Dabba Thopa Dabba. Gewa Dami Gewa Chunam Sherab Chumar Gewa. You will gain an extraordinary capacity to distinguish between what is a wrong thing to do and what is a right thing to do. You will have a moral conscience and a sense of moral discrimination. You can say, this thing's going to hurt people. And you can say, this thing's going to help people. And you gain a capacity for making fine ethical distinctions, okay, in your life. Okay? I have a garden, right? I spent most of the last two days gardening, or much of the last 2 days gardening. And if you have a working garden that you spend maybe a couple hours a day on, you begin to appreciate. It's a very nice Buddhist practice to have a garden. And I have sticker plants, right? So if I let them go, if I don't go out there and dig them up, they go to seed, they make flowers first, then they go to seed, and then they spread thorns all over the garden, you know, and they stick my feet, right? So if I see one, I have to dig it up quickly. And karma is the same, you see. If you have to avoid even small bad karmas, because they grow. And you have to go through your garden, and there's a big weed and there's a little tiny weed. Which one do you go for? Both. But the little one is only this high, and you're like, well, why should I bother? But it's as dangerous as a big one, you see. It will hurt the garden as much as a big one. And then small, beautiful flowers, they're called, do you know what a volunteer is in a garden? Volunteer means a plant that seeds itself, like a Mexican primrose throws a seed across the whole garden, and one starts on the other side of the garden next year by accident. A bird takes the seed over there, or the wind takes a seed over there. So if you see a volunteer, then you just leave it alone, right? You have to treat it with respect. You say, you're so brave, you know? You jumped the whole garden. I'm going to water you and give you for... You're like a really cool plant, you know? And you have to encourage the little ones. And karma is like that. Like, even if you could offer someone a cup of tea or a piece of zucchini bread, you should do it, right? Because then those karmas grow. And the next year you have volunteers everywhere. It's really nice. Okay, all right. So to be able to distinguish between a weed and a... when it's small is a great skill. I smell something burning, but I don't know what it is. It's a great skill to be able to tell a weed in the first half inch or so, to get to know them and take them out fast. He's talking about that kind of discrimination. Okay? In Sanskrit, it's called viveka. Okay, viveka. Vivekananda means the joy of discrimination. The first yogi in the United States, I think. 1879, Chicago World's Fair or something like that. I don't know. Anyway, here we go. What number are we on? We just finished 4. Number 5. Marikpa dantimo ki mun basalwa. You will able to munsal ningbo. Dispel the darkness. That's the name of the text he's translating for the next 30 years. Munsal is a famous book. Munsal means to clear away the darkness. You will be able to clear away the darkness of your own ignorance. Okay? What is ignorance? You know, is it some philosophical thing? No. Someone yells at you. Someone criticizes you. In the press, for example. Somebody says bad things about you, which are maybe true or maybe completely false. But the wise reaction to that, the reaction of a wise person, right, is to realize that that is coming from a seed in my own mind, right? I was critical, maybe even silently. I was judgmental of many other people, you know? Oh, I'm so smart and they don't know anything, you know, like that, for a long time. And then that seed will grow in your mind. And then it will create some criticism, right? Then if you are criticized and you criticize back, you plant new criticism for the future, right? It becomes a cycle, right? So if you offer a butter lamp regularly, subtly, it has a karmic effect on your own intelligence. And the next time you're criticized, you avoid criticizing back. You say, that's not going to help anything, you see? You just be positive and say sweet things. You see what I mean? And it will change. So the capacity to do that is increased if you offer butter lamps on your altar. Okay? It's very interesting. Your wisdom will increase. Okay? How is it? Sharab ginnawa topa giwada. You will attain the illumination of wisdom, okay? Informed state of mind. You want to find a new boyfriend, you should change your lipstick. Right? Right? No, it doesn't help, okay? You should help a lonely person. You should find I prefer elderly people. Find an elderly person, help them. I got the same one for how long? I don't know, 20 years. Help an elderly person. And that karma, the karma will create strong relationships in your life, okay? So to understand that and not to go wandering around the Sephoras of the world. What's a Sephora? These are the expensive cosmetic shops. I think there's one in Arizona. It's Scottsdale or something. Anyway, Shirokinawatopa. You gain the light of wisdom. You don't go searching for new cosmetics. You go searching for more nursing homes. Okay? That's the light of wisdom. Don't think of it as philosophy. Think of it as a guideline for your life, your real life, okay? De korwana korwet se namdiyam mumbar nepa mingyorwa dang. There are people who live in places which are more dark and overcast than other places, okay? For example, Beijing, or Shanghai, we go there, we teach there, right? We go pretty frequently. It's very rare to see the sun in the sky in those two cities. It's really sad, you know? I think that's why Chinese people's skin color is as it is in the basin of the Yangtze or something like that. There's no light, you know? It's very, in Beijing right now, the pollution is so bad that, and Mexico City is similar, and Lima and some other places, but the pollution is so bad. And in Shanghai area, it's partly because of fog. I mean, it's always been that way. But now the pollution and the fog are mixed together. You can stay in Shanghai or Beijing for a month and not see the sun. You're not even sure if it's out. You see this dull red thing up in the sky, you know? And it's that's a karma, okay? That's a karmic result, okay? And it says here, if you offer light to others with a pure motivation, you will live in sunny Arizona where you can get skin cancer. Now, anyway, you can put on the S, what do you call it? What do you call that stuff? SPF stuff. But what I mean is, you will live in a, and that changes your mood, right? You feel more bright and happy. The divorce rate in Arizona is one of the lowest in the country. Your life is more bright and happy. Or maybe you're so hot that you can't argue. I don't know. Okay, anyway. By the way, an extreme example of someone caught in darkness. By the way, I was in St. Petersburg. I worked there. We did 14 years of cataloging in St. Petersburg. We saved 134,000 Tibetan manuscripts. That didn't get in the New York Times either. But anyway, that's a country that's the farthest northern city in the world, which is has a large population, over a certain million of people, St. Petersburg, and it's dark. It can be dark for 14 hours a day or 18 hours a day. It's really depressing. Like the sun doesn't come up. The sun comes up at midnight and goes down at 4 in the morning or something. People go out at midnight to have a cup of coffee at a cafe, you know. So to live in those places is because you haven't shared light, okay? An extreme example is there are creatures in the world, in the universe, who you've never met, who are born into the depths of outer space, between stars, and they can live there without oxygen or food or water. Their spirit, their mind lives there, and they are lonely and in the dark for a whole lifetime, you know? They are beings, sugme means arupa. They have no physical bodies, and they live in the darkness between worlds for their whole life. And that's an extreme example. And you don't believe in it, and I don't care. Okay. Longcho Chewa Gyobar, you will have a better finances, okay? That was number 8. Number 9, Tori Sukyawa Gyawa, you will be born into a, your passage through death will lead to another world which is more beautiful, okay? I like to say that rather than reborn, okay? Your spirit will pass through the bardo and you will enter a more beautiful world on the other side, okay? Last one, Nyurdu Yongso Nyanga Nedawa. You will quickly become enlightened. Okay, that one was the same, right? In every case. So we have finished the 10 for lamps and for incense and for flowers. Okay, and that I'm going to lay off on that because you will never get to the end. Okay, I'm going to go to the next section. Okay, ready? We got like 10 minutes. We have reached Jorwechu Sumba. Say Jorwechu. Jorwechu. Sumba. The third of the 6 preliminary practices. The first one was, had 2 parts. Cleaning your room, straightening up your room and setting up your altar. The second one was putting the offerings forth. Okay, we finished the first 2. We're making great progress. I like it. I love to go through a text sweetly and slowly and chew on it and enjoy the taste. And I think it's nice. Okay. It might take 30 years. Who cares? George Osumba. The third is Ten Dewa La Lub Duk Lukye. Say Ten Dewa La Lu Du Lu Ge. Okay. Ten means your meditation cushion. Okay. Ten means your meditation cushion. Dewa means comfortable. La means on it. Lu means put your body. Duk Luk means how you sit on your meditation cushion. How you, the position or the posture with which you sit on your meditation cushion. Ge. It has eight parts, okay? There are eight parts to the traditional meditation posture. And say, nam nang, nam nang, che, ge. Nam nang, che, ge. Che ge means the eight dharmas, but here it means the eight aspects of a good meditation posture. There are eight parts of a good meditation posture. And they are said to be related to the enlightened being named Nam Nang. In Sanskrit, that's Vairochana. Okay? Vairochana. Vairochana. Okay? Vai means various, and the word various came from that. Vai means various. Roch. Roch in Sanskrit means light. Okay? Sometimes R's change to L's in Sanskrit, and it becomes Loka, meaning the world of light. So roch and lok, loch are the same. Okay? Vairochana means the deity who has the capacity of showing different aspects on different days. If they're talking at the prison, they look buff and tough. Then if they go teach at the nursing home, they are sweet and gentle, you know, like that. If they teach at the bar, they talk about sports. Okay? If they go to China, they talk about the 5,000 years of Chinese dynasties. They know all the dynasties and they know the dates. And people love it. When they go to Japan, they talk about. Ningbo is so popular in Japan. You don't know. Martial arts. Anyway. Vairochana means the person has the ability to morph to their circumstances. And it's an important skill. The eight traditional aspects of a good meditation posture are said to relate to the enlightened being called Vairochana. Okay, got it? Vairochana, accenting all Sanskrit on the penultimate syllable, is just trying to put an American accent on Sanskrit, which is really weird to someone from India, but that's okay. Okay, like Amitabha for Amitabha. Okay, like that. You should try to break that habit. If you're going to learn Sanskrit, break the penultimate, the next to last syllable habit. Okay? All right, here we go. Lugye dam chulam kang der kut. He says, you can take the eight-part posture of Vairochana, but more importantly, it should be comfortable. So he's like, forget the eight-part posture. I'll teach you the eight-part posture, but in the end, it should be whatever's comfortable for you. The goal of a correct meditation posture is to park your body still and leave it. And if your knees are screaming at you, you fail. Okay? If you need to sit in a chair, sit in a chair. But don't try to look good and be uncomfortable. Because that's against the whole idea. The idea is to park your body. You know, like those vampires who they leave their body in a casket and then they go running around all day and then they come back to the body? That's a good example. That should be in our lamrim. You should park your body on a meditation cushion and leave. And the body shouldn't call you back to the physical world. Your body should be as comfortable as possible so you can think about higher things. And your spine's not screaming and your knees aren't screaming, okay? Find a way to park your body in its casket and then go take off and do your meditation. And at the end, come back to the body, okay? But the body shouldn't be calling you back. Baby's calling me home. We're learning this word. It's calling me home. It should not call you. The body should be neutral. And then the mind should be able to fly, okay? And not forced back to the body. The body shouldn't be screaming in pain and bringing the mind back to the body. Park the body and leave it in whatever way is comfortable for you. And that will take experimenting, okay? I'm going to go over tonight. Is that okay? Do you care? If you got to leave, just leave, okay? I don't care. Let's at least do the 8, okay? Okay, is that okay? If you have to leave, please leave. Okay, don't feel obligated to stay. If you have to pee-pee, which is impossible because you just had a break, you can still get up and go. Okay, here we go. This is the whole name of the section, okay? It has another part. Your state of mind should be extraordinarily virtuous. And there's a practice for that. So this third preliminary has two parts. One, parking the body. Two, making the mind super sweet before you start to meditate. So it has two parts. Park the body and then make the mind very fertile and very sweet, okay? Which involves going for refuge and thinking about saving the world. I call it the Spider-Man state of mind. Okay? I'm going to save the world. And I take shelter. I take shelter and I'm going to save the world. So that's the second half. Those two things are the second half. The first half is park your body. Okay, here we go. Gyudan Denge Sujawa means never start a meditation session without reviewing your motivation. Okay? And we'll get to that. We're not going to cover it tonight, but we'll get to that. Okay? We're going to try to cover the 8 parts of your posture before we quit tonight. Okay? Because I'm fresh. Okay. Because I had a nice break. Deni gyabto dan dun mawa shikchate. About your meditation cushion, the back should be higher and the front should be lower. Okay? So I have one under my butt right now. Okay? And I don't sit on the whole thing. I'm propping up the back higher than the front. Okay, the back of my butt is higher than the front of my butt, which is, I'm not going to demonstrate. It might be reported. Okay? We have cushions. Do you got those? Let's do it tomorrow. Let's do it tomorrow, Kathy. Tomorrow I'm going to show you some options on your meditation cushions. It's good to see 4 or 5 options. You should experiment. Everybody's different. We had a guy named Dieter Gewissler in New Jersey. He insisted on using a wooden 2x4. And he swore it was comfortable for him. And nobody else found that to be the case. So tomorrow let's talk about some options you have. Okay? Here we go. There's a secret, profound tantric reason to do that. Meaning, he refused to describe it in an open teaching. He just said, there's a reason, especially in Tantra, why the back of your bottom should be raised higher than the front. It has to do with your central channel, Sushumna, and how the prana flows through your central channel, right? That has an effect on how you see the people around you, which is Tantra, okay? Not like sex orgies in the back of a yurt in the desert, okay? Which is not very fun anyway. because it's too hot and there's flies everywhere. Seriously, it's the last thing you'd want to do. So the back of the seat should be raised a bit. That straightens your central channel. That increases the flow of prana. By the way, yoga does the same thing, right? That's why yoga was invented, to help straighten the central channel. So if you straighten the central channel, prana flows more easily. The heart chakra is connected to your physical senses, hearing, seeing, smelling, tasting, and feeling touches. If the prana is flowing well, as information comes in through your eyes, ears, nose, mouth, and body, those objects strike you as more divine. Okay? Those objects strike. You can connect with the divinity in other people better if your meditation cushion is good. Got it? That's what he didn't want to mention. Oh! Okay. Because it's Tantra. Okay? Tantra should not be spoken about publicly or to newspapers or things like that. We're not allowed to do that. Okay? All right. Ching. Tun Rinpo Dekyang. Tun Rinpo Dekyang means even if you sit there for a long time, say Pong Minawa. Pong Minawa. Your butt won't get sore. Okay? It's kind of cute how people remember bad words better than good words. Like if you teach people a Tibetan cuss word, they remember it immediately. Anyway, Pong Minawa means your bottom won't get sore, okay? Sok, etc. Ki ne kyang. Ne means it's a crucial point, okay? If your meditation cushion is correct, if the back is higher than the front, it will help your tantric realizations, meaning you will see more divine in the world. And your butt won't be sore, okay? Several important points. Dengi oksar karki. I'll go for like another 20 minutes, okay? So don't freak out. I'll just go to 10, all right? Dengi oksar karki yungdun chukor du chi. I need a piece of paper and a pen. And Scotty, beam me up to the little camera here. Okay, Captain. Thank you. Below the, do you have another one for yourself? Okay, below the meditation cushion, you should draw a swastika, okay? So I'm going to teach you how to draw a proper swastika. This is a good sign. It's an ancient good sign. It shouldn't be reported in the news that Geshe Michael's drawing swastikas all over the place, okay? It's funny to think like that, right? You have to be like, I'm not drawing swastikas. The text says, you should put a swastika under your meditation cushion. Swastika meant su-astika, means goodness. Okay? Oki sakar, you should take a piece of chalk and under your meditation cushion, are you okay? You want to? Okay. Under your meditation cushion, you should draw a swastika. Chukor, say chukor. Chukor means Dharma circle, but it means left. It should go left way. So what does that mean exactly? All right, I'll show you the correct way and I'll show you the wrong way. Okay, this is chukor. Hey, your pen is not being cooperative yet. No, it's okay. Okay, so that's a. Can you see? Okay. Can you see it on the projector?
That's helpful. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a chukor. Okay, see how. And as I said the other night, I like to think of it as if there was jets coming out of the arms of the swastika, right? It would spin counterclockwise. If those were shooting out air and pushing the thing around, it would spin counterclockwise, which is considered auspicious. It goes to the left. You see what I mean? Now I'll show you the wrong way to draw it. How is that? Okay, so this is right, and this is wrong. I did a yoga book once, and I showed all the wrong versions of the postures, and the editor talked me out of it. They said lazy people will just open up the book and start doing it that way. So I'm a little hesitant to draw it the wrong way for you, but that's the wrong way. Good? Okay. And don't think of it as a bad sign. It's a very beautiful and it's a very sacred, ancient sacred sign, and it can have beautiful meaning, you know. Okay. So you should take a piece of chalk, and under your meditation cushion, you should make that sign. Turn your course to Yun Dung Ni Dorje Gyadam Ki De Yimbe. So, anybody have another Vajra? No? You have? Okay, he's coming. Dorje Gyadam means a crossed Vajra. Somebody asked a question right the other day. Ki de, say de. De means substitute. So the swastika under your cushion is a substitute for a cross dorje. Okay. Cross dorje just means you have one and then you have another one over it. Okay, like that. Okay. And a cross dorje represents stability, and as I said the other night, it's often put on a banner in front of the Lama's seat, which is a request to them to stay. Okay, so a cross dorje means may the Lama stay in my life. A swastika is a substitute for a cross dorje. Okay, Sangha Nishi just remembered. Dorje den lumbar dorje. Tumba dorje den to ngumba sangeki namtar jesu tumba dan. One of the meanings of the cross dorje is to remember that Lord Buddha was enlightened in the town called Bodh Gaya is the modern name. Okay, Bodh Gaya is a recent name. It's only like 1,000 years old. The original name was Vajrasana. Vajrasana. Okay, Dorje Den. The original name of Bodh Gaya was Vajra, V-A-J-R-A-S-A-N-A. So are we going to be able to tell these apart? Yeah, okay. But so that's a cross Dorje, okay? All right. Dorje, say Dorje.
Dorje.
Gyadam.
Dorje.
Gyadam. Swastika is called in Tibetan Yungdung, Yungdung, say Yungdung. Okay, so this is a Dorje Gyadam, and this is a Yungdung, okay? Don't forget to get it after me, okay? Asana means what? It means seat. The yoga poses originally were meant to prepare your body for long periods of sitting. The original purpose of doing yoga, one of the original purposes, was to prepare the body for long periods of sitting. So they were called, those exercises were called asana. Okay? The word as is directly related to asana. Okay? Okay? If you're interested. Like us means to sit or to be. Like svastika, asti means to sit or to be. Okay? Okay. So part of the reason to write a swastika under your meditation seat is to remember where Lord Buddha was enlightened, which is called the seat of the diamond, Vajra Asana, Vajra Asana. And that's extremely important. Okay? The Vajra, or the diamond, is the most important metaphor in all of Buddhism. And Lord Buddha was enlightened in a city called the place of the diamond. Okay, so the diamond is extremely important. If you had to go to work and you were a sincere Buddhist and were trained properly for many years, you would want to work in the diamond business. Regardless of the rest of the details of diamonds, they are the most important metaphor in all of Buddhism. And Lord Buddha's in the place where he sat when he was enlightened is called the place of the Dhamma. Okay? It's very, very important. Okay. Vajrasana. So the reason to use the swastika is to remember the cross diamonds, which is partly to remember where Lord Buddha was enlightened. If you had to go to work and you had a choice, it would be good to work around diamonds all day. Okay? Just to remember Lord Buddha. See what I mean? By the way, interestingly, if you care, this is the shape of a diamond crystal. Okay? This is they are octahedrons. They're often twinned octahedrons. This part is an octahedron, four-sided crystal with four facets on the top and four on the bottom. And then this is another octahedron. So this is one of the most common forms of a diamond crystal. The first great diamonds found in the world came from India. Okay? They fell out of mountains in South Africa before India split off from South Africa. And that's why you find diamonds in Brazil. There's no diamond pipes in Brazil. There's no kimberlite pipes in Brazil. They all fell out of mountains and worked their way down streams in South Africa before Brazil left Africa. It's very cool. And the first great source of diamonds in the world was India, because it was very close to the diamond pipes before it broke off of Africa. Okay? So anyway, Vranki Drupa Tembe Gopa Yur. The crossed Dorje is meant to represent the stability of your practice. Your personal practice is steady. Steady wins the race, okay? Don't do 3-hour meditations. Learn to do a 12-minute meditation, okay? And don't go crazy. Do 12 minutes every day. Get your butt on the cushion every day. To do 2 hours on Monday and then do 2 hours on Thursday is useless, okay? It's like doing 2 hours of yoga and then not doing any yoga for a week. It's not going to help you. Do a little bit every day, okay? To remind you of that fact, draw a swastika under your cushion to remind you. Your practice should be small and modest and constant, okay? And not like 4 hours one day and nothing the next day. Do a little bit every day, okay? And you'll become a great master, okay? Sakya Pandita said, memorize 3 Tibetan words a day. And that's all. You will become a great master of Tibetan. Okay? David Swenson, who is a great Ashtanga teacher, he taught me to do like, I don't know, I hate that, Urdhva Dhanurasana, right? And it was very hard for me. I couldn't do it for many years. And he got 3 phone books, big ones, and he put them on the ground. And he made me do Urdhva Dhanurasana on 3 phone books, which anybody can do, okay? Because it's like this high. Then he gave me the 3 phone books. He said, do Urdhva Dhanurasana. Then I did it because it was easy. Then he came up and he tore out 1 page. He said, tomorrow do it with 1 page less. And now I can do Urdhva Dhanurasana, okay? It's like, I don't know how many pages since then. It was a couple thousand pages, okay? But every day, tear out 1 page. And that's steady. You see what I mean? Okay. Ndrupatambagubaya. Gadam muni lait samayimbe gom mirun. This gom doesn't mean meditation. This gom is spoken with a pre-nasal accent. Say, ngom. Ngom. Okay? Then say gom. Then say gom. 3 different sounds. Ngom. Gom. Gom. 3 different words, okay? If you're fancy, if you want to give yourself a headache, you can add 2 more. Gom and kom. Gom. 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 Ngom. Gom. I mean, if you're Tibetan, it's good. And if you're Sanskrit, it's good. You hear those five differently. And if you have a really good teacher, you can hear the difference. If you don't get a good teacher, you can never learn Sanskrit because they'll all sound the same to you. Okay, kom 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 kom. Okay. Anyway, it's important that we have a prenasal here. Gom means don't step on it. What's gom mean, Virohil? Meditate. Okay. What's kom mean? I'm thirsty. I'm sorry, I have time. And kom means I'm thirsty. Okay? So you got to learn to pronounce them. And we can do it someday. Ha ha. Okay. Gom means don't step on it. What? Don't draw a double dorje under your meditation seat, because when you stand up with your bare feet on your seat, you will be stepping on the sign of an enlightened being. Therefore, we use a swastika as a substitute. This is the sign of an enlightened being, and you're not allowed to step on it. So you can't use it under your meditation cushion. You can use it in front of a lama's seat properly, as good luck. You sew, you can order them from India, you sew this symbol onto a piece of silk and you hang it in front of the lama's seat, and it means may the lama stay forever. See what I mean? But you can't step on this symbol. Okay. Alright. You make gomino. We got another 8 minutes. Hang in there. Don't get sleepy on me, okay? Look interested and bright. Okay, I know the cookies have that effect. That's why you have to pay for them. Denetsa turwa dam kusha matrupar semo dundu ten ne ting. Say tsad turwa. Tsad turwa. Then say kusha. Kusha. Do you have any kusha, Jiggy, Venerable Jimmy? Do you have any kusha here? Huh? On the altar? Yeah. Oh, can you give me that, one of those brooms wrapped in the yellow cloth? Hand me either one. So in ancient India, there's a grass called kusha. Say kusha. The Tibetans translate it as kusha. So it's a loan word. They didn't retranslate it. They just said kusha. Okay. Kusha is a kind of fragrant grass that grows pretty commonly around India. And it's considered sacred. Okay, Lord Buddha was sitting on kusha when he got enlightened. Okay, so just either one. Just open it up and give me either one. Okay, probably the one with more kusha on it. It's a very fragrant, holy grass, and if you go to any Indian store, even in Mexico City or Tepoztlan or Chapala, you can find it. They sell them in Indian grocery stores all over the world. And just either one, that's okay. That's okay. Give me the whole thing. So that's kusha grass, okay? It has a nice smell. And it looks like that. The usual stalks look about this long. These have been cut for the broom, okay? Oftentimes you'll see that whole broom made of kusha, and they make a handle out of kusha. But then when you buy them at the grocery store, and then you take them apart and you take out the kusha grass. Then this, it has a stem on the end, okay? It grows from a stem and then it grows this kind of grass. So under your meditation cushion, it's considered traditional to put kusha grass. The tips, which means the stalk, which doesn't mean the tip, okay? The tip should face towards the front of your meditation cushion, okay? That's considered the tips. And it says matruk. It says don't jumble them up. They should be like combed hair. They should be nice and orderly, okay? Tsemo dun de tene ting. Ting means lay down flat. Lay them down flat with the tips towards the front, okay? Deyang tumbe tsai ten dungumba sanggepi namtar dang. We use kusha grass because Lord Buddha sat on kusha grass when he got enlightened. It's considered very powerful. It's considered a very powerful grass. By the way, you can leave it there for months. It doesn't get old. It turns brown, but that's no big deal. Okay, you can leave it there for a long time. Or you can use Torwa. Torwa means reeds. What do you call? Is there another? Huh? Is there another word for Torwa? Like that you find near a lake?
Tulis.
What's it called?
Tulis.
Tulis? I think reeds. They have joints on them, right?
Bamboo.
It's not bamboo. What'd you say? Let's say reeds. Okay. They're thin. They're thinner than a pencil. They're about the size of a drinking straw. And they have joints on them, which in Tibetan is called sik. These are also called sik. These joints are also called sik. Each section of a reed from a lake represents more life. So Torwa is considered a grass of long life. Okay? And if you have an illness and you want to live longer so you can serve more people, then get some Torwa instead of kusha and put it under your... You can find it in any, like, reeds. In where I live, it's called Johnson grass. And it's a bitch for your garden, okay? It grows huge networks under the garden and shows up all over the place. But it's a beautiful long grass, okay? And the joints and the sections, the jointed sections, similar to bamboo, are considered sympathetic. What do you call it? Sympathetic magic. They help your life energy, okay? Like that. That's called Satorwa. Those of you who are coming to the retreat in August, Torwa is one of the substances we offer to a fire, in a fire offering. And we will be using Torwa in the fire offering. And when you offer it, you make prayers for the long and healthy life of all the people in this world. You see what I mean? And so you do this very beautiful, and you take two strands and you throw it into the fire. And then the smoke covers the planet, right? Eventually those atoms cover the planet and they knock against the ionosphere and they send vibrations out to other stars. And scientifically it's happening. There is an effect with the right motivation that you are making prayers for the long life of every living creature in the universe. And that, when you throw the Torwa into the fire, you imagine that atoms will be sprinkling the, what do you call it? They will hit the ether at the edge of the atmosphere. And that has a repercussion in the universe. You see what I mean? And you can think, I'm praying for the long life of all beings. You see what I mean? So we offer that grass also we will offer it in August. We will do two fire offerings. And everybody will get to throw stuff in, okay? All right. I got two more minutes. He's quoting a famous line of verse which happens to come from a fire puja and also a rabne. Say rabne. Rabne. Rabne means a special ritual which I can teach you someday if we have nothing else to do. That you do before you build a new house or you build a new chapel or in Glendale, Arizona, an adobe complex. But before you start building, you do Rabne. You do a certain fire offering and you do Rabne. So this verse is about the power of reeds comes in the Rabne ritual, okay? And he quotes only one line. So Geshe Michael went and on a date with a blonde Russian model in New York, right? I don't even know. I've never met a blonde Russian model. Anyway, I'm at home looking up computer references, all right? Here's the full, it's kind of amazing. Here's the full quotation, okay? Turwe tseni pelwache pate, dorje sambe tseni rabdub ne, nyomon keshi gyunche kyurpa yi, tashi de kyan seyan pelgir chik. That's the whole verse, okay? He only gave one line. I gave you the whole thing. All right? Why? Because those ladies are typing for the last 25 years. So it's in the computer. All right? Let me translate you the whole verse, okay? Durwe tseni power jepate. That's the line he used. Durwe tseni power jepate means if you use reeds under your cushion or offer it to a fire, it will increase people's lifespans. It will increase the life of all beings. Dorje sembe tseni rabdubne. You will come to have the same length of life as Vajrasattva, okay? Tantric deity of purification. Nyomon keshi gyunche gyurpa yi. You will cut the stream of your negative emotions and of rebirth and death. Constant being born, constant dying. If you use turwa, grass, you will cut them. Tashi dekyan seyan pelgir chik, and then may the lives of all living beings be extended. Okay? May their lives be extended. That motivation, as you use durwa under your seat, or as you offer durwa in a fire, will increase your own life. It will overcome your own obstacles to your own life. Okay? Durwa tendu chena tse pelwatan. If you use reeds, durwa, under your meditation cushions, you will live longer and other beings. If you use kusha, you will have more purity and more good karma. Okay, that's a verse, okay? That's two lines of a verse. Kusha dini sangshin ge. And I'm not gonna give it to you yet, okay? I'm not going to overwhelm you. It's 10 o'clock already, okay? He quotes one part of a verse about the benefits of kusha grass. And I went and found the rest for you, okay? It's by the second Panchen Lama. He lived, I forgot. Anyway, he lived in the 1600s, okay? And I'll read you the verse next time, tomorrow night, okay? The benefits of kusha grass. Okay? Karmically. Karmic benefits of kusha grass. All right? Don't think this is all like just BS or something like that. Like, surrender to it and do it, and it's fun. You know, like you become like a magician or something. You know, like, I like kusha grass. I'm a kusha grass man. You know? And take the time and go to an Indian grocery store, ask them for a broom that came, a grass broom that came from India, kusha. They'll know what it is. And then take it apart and use it under your meditation cushion, and your meditation will change. That's why we're going through these hundreds of hours of talk about your meditation before you start meditating. Okay? Make the seat correctly, according to ancient tradition. And then your meditation will take off. Your meditation will be awesome. Okay? So don't just think, oh, this is all superstitious Tibetan stuff. It's not. Try it and see. Your meditation will improve. Okay? You will have fantastic meditations. Take it all very seriously. Okay? Make the little swastika. Arrange the kusha grass just right. You know, do the 8-point posture. And your meditation will change, right? People learn some 10-minute TM thing in a yoga studio, and they try to meditate for a week, and nothing happens, right? You have the whole 2,500 years of tradition, right? It's very beautiful. Use it, okay? Go home and be gung-ho, and go back to Hamburg and to your ex-rabbit house, and you know, get the right grass and do everything right, and your meditation will be awesome. You will have fantastic meditation. I did it, I can tell you. Okay? All right. Venerable Phil, let's go. Thank you.